Hello and welcome to Grounds for Peace, a Project Zion podcast series where we explore what it looks like to follow Jesus, the peaceful one, and ask difficult questions about how people of faith can make a difference in today's world. I'm your host, Robin Linkart. Today, I'm here with Glenn Johnson, who currently serves as the Peace and Justice Minister in the Pacific Southwest International Mission Center, Community of Christ. Glenn is a gifted minister and has served in sustained ministry roles as pastor specializing in outreach ministries, Mission Center President, Mission Center Financial Officer, and now in his current role, exploring peace and justice opportunities in all areas of his Mission Center. Glenn also proactively networks with others who support the worth of all persons, sacredness of creation, and unity in diversity. Welcome, Glenn, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Robin. I'm really happy to be able to talk with you today.
Now, I know you've interviewed with us once before, but it has been a while. So, Glenn, before we jump into today's focus, please tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I sort of hope you will edit this part out, but next year will be my 50th year as an ordained minister in Community of Christ, believe it or not. And I guess I would say I live in Thousand Palms, California, which is fairly recent. That's near Palm Springs, California. And full disclosure, I am employed by the Pacific Southwest International Ministry Center. I'm a full-time peace and justice minister, as you mentioned, and I also serve the church as a mission center president, both here and in the Lamoni Heartland Mission Center, as you know, obviously. And prior to that, I was a full-time pastor in the Niagara Falls Lewiston, New York congregation. But most of my career was in the high-tech and multimedia industry, most recently as a senior VP of marketing for the Americas at Magic Software, which is a NASDAQ-listed company headquartered near Tel Aviv. And as a bivocational minister, I've long had interests and a focus on mission, as you mentioned, particularly ministry with LGBTQIA plus communities and unhoused communities, with more than a decade of focus specifically on each of those in my lifetime. And finally, I should put in a plug for Community of Christ Seminary. I plan to walk for graduation with a master's in peace and social transformation in December of this year, 2025. So that's a brief summary.
I love it. And I always learn new things about people, even people I've known for a long time, like you, when they give a recap of things that we might share about ourselves to help our listeners get to know you better. So thanks for taking us on that quick journey, Glenn.
You bet.
Community of Christ World Conference, generally convened every 3 years, was recently held May 30 through June 6 at our international headquarters in Independence, Missouri. Glenn was there and posted some wonderful World Conference reflections on his Mission Center's June 20 weekend update. Now, as soon as I read those wonderful reflections, I reached out right away to invite Glenn to share on our podcast. There are so many things I would like you to share about with our listeners, Glenn. And let me just kind of go through the list because, you know, we need to settle in and sit back and listen because this is going to be a great podcast. First, I want to give you an opportunity to do a deep dive on your World Conference experience and reflections. And then would love for you to do a high-level overview of how Community of Christ has journeyed closer and closer to Jesus, the peaceful one, in your lifetime. And as you mentioned, you now have 50 years of ordained ministry on top of, you know, growing up in the church and that first faithful step into waters of baptism. After you take us on that journey, we want to hear all about your endeavors and explorations in your current role, Peace and Justice Minister. Okay, so let's jump in. World Conference 2025. Take it away, Glenn.
Well, Community of Christ World Conference is always such a multidimensional experience that it is both, I would say, wonderful, and yet it's really difficult to describe because there's so much to it. Perhaps the most obvious thing about it is that it's composed of delegates and visitors from around the world. And now with the last two conferences, it literally takes place all around the world. So while we still, we're sitting in this huge assembly of people in the auditorium in Independence, Missouri, or at least I was, there are also remote sites, and there are activities, of course, at the Community of Christ Temple across the street, but these remote sites are in Honduras and Canada and the Côte d'Ivoire, or which we would say in French, or the Ivory Coast in English, where there were two language groups meeting there, both in English and French. And so the technology is also quite impressive that helps to bring all of this together. And I have to remark on that coming from the tech industry, right? So, the live video connections, the simultaneous translations in multiple languages within the conference chamber, but not only in the conference chamber, also during the worship services in the temple and in the various quorum meetings that are taking place. And the World Conference is supported by a legislative tracking system. It's a software written by Wim van Klinken that connects, the lecterns and the presiding officers, and it supports Robert's Rules of Order, but also the very unique Community of Christ Common Consent procedures. It's literally one of a kind as far as a system, and it's also incorporates the remote sites, and it incorporates multiple languages of the speakers and so forth. It's amazing. And so I could geek out even more about all of the technology and the voting devices that people utilize in the conference chamber and so forth. But it's also important to mention some of the other unique aspects of World Conference. The worship services are deep and rich and meaningful. The use of the Moments of Blessing team adds a richness to the conference. There's a social dimension of meeting so many people, networking, community formation that takes place. And it's also amazing because you see and talk to so many people who are, I would say, living our theology, living our mission initiatives, our enduring principles. So I was thankful because I was able to represent Pacific Southwest International Mission Center at World Conference as a delegate, and also to serve in my role as Peace and Justice Minister in a sense, in that I was able to participate in the expo that takes place during conference. I was down in the lower level of the temple and the Western Field table. We really were highlighting the Redwoods Peace Colloquy, which is coming up December 3rd through the 5th in Portland, Oregon, and a summer book study that will be leading up to that. And the focus of that is on ministry with unhoused persons. But of course, the conference stood out because of its historic nature with the ordination of Stacy Cram. And witnessing Stacy Cram's approval and ordination to the Office of President and Prophet of Community Christ, it was a highlight experience of the conference. I've known Stacy for about 25 years. When she lived in Las Vegas and I lived in Orange County, California, we both served as members of the Buckhorn Board of Directors. And we served on the same committee. Stacy was the chairman of that committee. And it was amazing how for each of our committee meetings, there would be an agenda published in advance. We would follow the agenda during the meetings. There would be not just minutes of the meetings that she took herself and shared with her committee members, but also action items for those minutes, and who was assigned to the action item, and when what the deliverable was, and when it was due. And you could be sure that in between meetings, if you had a deliverable, you would get a phone call or an email from Stacy following up to see how you were doing on your deliverable. I had never witnessed, I'll be honest, I'd never witnessed that level and that depth of organization and administrative skill in a volunteer church committee before. And it would really made a big impression on me at the time. And I continue to marvel at her professionalism. But as I say, Stacy's ordination was historic because in many ways, her selection and ordination as president of the church represents the culmination of decades of struggle in the efforts to achieve gender equality in Community of Christ. And Stacy seemed the natural choice for many and will bring the kind of balanced leadership that the church needs. It was historic in the sense that she was joined by Jhené Grover and Bunda Chibwe in the first presidency, and Mareva Arnaud as presiding evangelist. Six new apostles were also ordained, as well as new leadership in the Quorums of 70, who selected Karen Peter as the senior president of the Presidents of 70. And Jen Kilpak was set apart as the president of the High Priest's Quorum. So at this conference, we now have seen every quorum and office filled either now or in the past by a woman. Let's just review that because I think it's significant. The prophet president, counselor to the president, presiding bishop, counselor to the presiding bishop, presiding evangelist, president of the Council of 12 Apostles, secretary of the Council of 12 Apostles, apostle, president of the High Priest's Quorum, senior president of the Presidents of 70, president of 70, World Church Secretary, standing high council. All of these ministerial offices in the ecclesial structure of the church are either currently or have been in the past filled by women. So I see Stacy Cram's ordination as president of the church not as a beginning of a new era, but as the culmination of an epoch in Community of Christ history that began with the lead up to Section 156 of the Doctrine and Covenants when women were first authorized to serve in the priesthood of the church. And what we have witnessed and are witnessing is the completion of a transition from patriarchal leadership and a paradigm of what I would call non-binary leadership in the church. In any other conference, some of these other items would have stood out as major historic events. The selection of Bunda Chibwe as the first person from the continent of Africa to serve in the first presidency would have been the major event of the conference and something that would have been, fully celebrated as the historic accomplishment of that conference. And in any other conference, the selection of Mareva Arnaud, the first woman of color to serve in the office of presiding evangelist, would have really stood out. And I'm not saying they didn't stand out, but this is sort of a colorblind, non-binary leadership paradigm now, and it has become almost the norm. And so while these things are noticed, they're starting to feel like the norm. And that's as it should be. We must always remain on guard, I think, to avoid slipping back into being too US-centered, too Eurocentric, too patriarchal. But overall, we are witnessing an amazing arc of history that is bending towards justice, to borrow the phrase of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This is what Community of Christ, I believe, is called to be. And as followers of Jesus Christ, we would say that all are welcomed at the table. So, at any other conference, there are other things that would have stood out as well. The adopting of the statement on nonviolence could easily have been the headline because one of the most significant actions of the conference was that adoption of that statement by the delegates on behalf of Community of Christ. And in the statement on nonviolence, we affirm that violence is a means to embody the gospel message modeled by the teachings and life of Jesus, the peaceful one. And I'm quoting from that statement now. We state in there that pursuing God's justice, nonviolence, seeks positive change through means guided by the Spirit that do not bring physical, emotional, spiritual, or relational harm to others, oneself, or creation. So it took us three conferences of common consent procedures spanning nearly a decade to come up with this statement. It's important and it's major and it's theologically significant and unique in many respects. The statement goes on. It says, "We believe that nonviolent actions often lead to transformative and peaceful results. We acknowledge that violent actions often lead to more violence, making peace impossible, that nonviolence promotes healing and reconciliation, advocating for the most vulnerable, taking care of creation, and creating a just and peaceful society aligned with God's vision of shalom." Now, I would say that it stops short of full pacifism in its conclusion when it says, "Therefore, Community of Christ, recognizing and celebrating the worth of all persons and the sacredness of creation, encourages the use of nonviolence whenever possible. How we decide when nonviolence is possible is the ongoing work of the church as we follow Jesus the Peaceful." So, as I say, this is historic, and there were a number of other actions taken at the conference on important matters of justice, and peace. I could go on. You want me to continue?
If you have other things of note, we'd love to hear about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, there were a number of resolutions. I would say that the peace and justice theology of Community of Christ informed, our consideration of these resolutions and that were coming before World Conference. A friend of mine, Paul Bethel of the Gardena Congregation in the Pacific Southwest International Mission Center, acted as the spokesperson, for example, for Resolution G5 on the climate emergency for fossil fuel reduction, which was actually sponsored by the Greater Pacific Northwest Mission Center. I want to make sure we give them credit for that. There were some other resolutions that were considered, including G2, affirming an inclusive Zion in the Holy Land, a resolution on gun violence, two additional climate justice resolutions, and there was a flurry of justice activity. And honestly, I'm awaiting the official actions of World Conference 2025 document to be released so that I can fully appreciate and remember the details of, the amendments and so forth that we considered. And the nuance of those actions that we took in the legislative process. But all of that was a part of that conference experience. And also, I would be remiss as a peace and justice minister if I didn't mention an important announcement that was made at World Conference of the Community of Christ Peace Forum. This was something that was very exciting. And you could even see our new prophet president, Stacey Cram, swinging her arms to get the delegates enthused and excited as the announcement was being made. The forum is designed as a peace event. It's to be held at the Community of Christ Temple in Independence, October 16th to the 18th in next year, 2026. So you've got time to plan for that if you're listening, and I hope that we'll all be able to participate in that. There's a some details of that announcement that are available in the June 3rd Tuesday bulletin of the World Conference, which is on our Ministry Tools SharePoint site. So it's a little bit of a member-only kind of site, I believe, but I'm sure it will be posted soon to the seaofchrist.org website. And you'll be able to get those details. It hasn't been posted yet. If anyone is listening that wants to make sure it gets posted up there, but the Peace Forum is designed to kind of continue in the tradition of the International Peace Colloquies that the Community of Christ held for so many years. And I know a lot of us were able to participate in those. And we'll hopefully be seeing things like the International Human Rights Award, which was sort of pre-announced at this World Conference, and the Community of Christ Peace Award and other elements at that event. So I did want to make sure that I got that plug in. So that's my quick summary of World Conference.
That is all really exciting stuff. And I want to underscore what you just shared about the Peace Forum, which will be held in 2026, October 16 to 18, at the Community of Christ International Headquarters, specifically in our temple in Independence, Missouri. And tag on that we do have an opportunity for a peace colloquy this year, the Redwoods Peace Colloquy, December 3 through 5. Is that right?
That's correct.
And that'll be, is that going to be in Sierra Pacific Mission Center?
Actually, in Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon. Okay, Portland, Oregon. That'll be a great location.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to just join you in your enthusiasm at just the fuller integration of the global church, representing context and culture and languages all around the world. I mean, we have really seen a huge push on making a proactive effort to integrate our members from all across the world. And I want to say a special shout out to Senior President of 70, Karen Peter, who has led the way. She was drafted to help plan World Conference 2023 worship, and she did a great job and then continued this year, assisted by Tyler Mars, who works in Formation Ministries at headquarters. But I have seen a noted increase in diversity in our World Conference worship experiences. And like you said, Glenn, there's all this technology behind the scenes and special things that others are doing to support this. It's never a one person thing. It always takes a team. But it just sends chills up and down my body of just Holy Spirit delight to witness that happening and to see the faces of our sisters and brothers on the screen who are joining us from remote locations. The other thing I wanted to say, as you talked about the diversity of persons represented in World Church leadership quorums, various leading quorums of the church, obviously I was a member of the Council of 12 Apostles when we were discerning the next prophet president. And I have to admit that it was at least several weeks after Stacy had accepted the call and it had been announced to the church, and it was after she had selected, so it was longer than that because it was after she had selected her two counselors and that was announced. It was several weeks after that before I woke up one morning and I just washed over with this awareness that this is the first time that there will be no white male represented in the first presidency. And I think that lag of time of awareness was due to this, it's becoming normal, right? This diversity is becoming normal. There was a time when there would have just been like, oh my gosh, right away, But anyway, it's I join you in celebrating all this beautiful, beautiful living into the all of what God invites us to become as community of Christ. Okay, Glenn, you grew up in the church, and I think we're about the same age, which means, and you kind of alluded to this, that we have been on the Community of Christ journey for many decades now. In retrospect, it kind of takes my breath away to see how we have been shaped and formed as we endeavored to really listen deeply to how God was calling us forward and to respond faithfully in our discipleship. As you look back on your experience, and you have noted a couple as you reflected on World Conference, but what do you see as like these key points on the journey? And which of those, from your perspective, had monumental implications on our story as a people of faith?
Yes, I have witnessed a lot of the ongoing evolution of Community of Christ, and part of me wonders if my great-great-grandmother Clara Cambridge, who was the 10th member of the church in London, Ontario, Canada in 1875, would even recognize the church today. But that's not a criticism of either our past or our present. It's to me, asking that question is a celebration. It's a celebration that we, as a people, have been sincere. We've been sincere in our hope for this living in the reign of God, so much so that I think it's changed us and it continues to change us. And we have a long way to go. But as long as we stay true to Jesus' teachings and our core principles, I think we can be filled with hope for the future. So I've witnessed so much in my lifetime. The international expansion is considered to have started during my lifetime. The Section 156 of the Doctrine and Covenants, the creation of the Community of Christ Seminary, the construction of the temple, its dedication to peace, reconciliation, and healing of the spirit, the change of our name to Community of Christ, and its prophetic importance in shaping our identity. the introduction of the Enduring Principles, the now mature, quote unquote, new hymnal, Community of Christ Sings, the mission prayer, and perhaps most importantly, an ongoing but rising emphasis on peace. Not only peace, but just peace. And through all of this is an ongoing transformation towards increasing diversity, equality, understanding, and inclusion. And I don't know if this will make the footnotes of history or not, but I'm going to get a little personal now. I brought the first resolution to World Conference calling for the ordination of LGBTQ persons. I was a pastor at the Basileia Congregation in Orange County, California, and we were formed as a welcoming congregation for the LGBT community and allies. And this was during a time of backlash against the inclusion of LGBT persons. The first presidency added more conservative balance to the World Church Committee's considering LGBT matters. And a temple school resource project that I was working on, along with Mission Center President John Billings from St. Louis and Gala President Ray Biller, my cousin, was canceled because there was fear that it was going to be, too progressive, if you will. This was when Grant McMurray was president of the church, and I'm sure these decisions pained him. I know where Grant's heart was in all of these things, but there were concerns that we were moving too fast. So anyway, I ignored those concerns. I drafted a resolution calling for LGBT ordination, and I shared it with Meredith Bischoff, who founded the Welcoming Community Network and was a member of Basileia Congregation. And I shared it with Andy Horner, who I had known since Graceland days and in the High Priest's Quorum as a voice for justice. And we then submitted that resolution to former Apostle Roy Schaefer, who was only recently former at that time. And he advised us on a better approach that would not be ruled out of order, which was extremely helpful, but it accomplished the same thing. And so it was adopted first by our congregation and then by our state conference and formally submitted for consideration at World Conference. And then at the World Conference, I was approached by Apostles Leonard Young and Ken McLaughlin and asked if I would be willing to move the motion, speak to the resolution, but then move to lay it on the table. And this they acknowledged, and Leonard Young and how much of a stickler on parliamentary procedure he was. But they acknowledged that this would be a violation of parliamentary procedure because you aren't supposed to speak to a motion and then make an additional motion. That's considered out of order. But they assured me that this request was from the first presidency, and Grant McMurray was still president at the time, and that it would be allowed. And so the idea was that the church needed time to dialogue about the issue. I was pretty reluctant to agree to it, but I went ahead. And the movers of a nearly identical resolution, which was from Western Canada, did the same thing at that conference. And I experienced a lot of regret over that decision, Robin. We did have the extensive dialogue sessions at a future world conference, but no action was taken. And so over the next decade, I experienced a lot of regret and misgivings over that. But then at a reunion, somewhere in the midst of that time, I heard Apostle Ken McLaughlin float the idea of having national or regional conferences. And eventually that idea started to get traction within the leading quorums of the church. And the bylaws or rules were amended in a way to make that possible. And so eventually that approach was taken, and action on LGBT ordination and marriage was considered and adopted in Australia and Canada and the United States and Europe and so on. But in the midst of that long decade, I felt some disillusionment. Not that I ever became uninvolved, but I began to lose hope. And the pendulum had swung, it seemed to me, in the wrong direction, and it didn't seem to be swinging back. Then something happened. I watched the movie Amazing Grace back in 2006, and it was about the history of the abolition movement in England. And I was moved by its main character, Wilbur Wilberforce. This movie was about his lifelong struggle to end slavery in England. And he'd been a parishioner of the former slave trader John Newton, who wrote the hymn Amazing Grace. That's how the film got its name. But the name of the film is a doesn't give you any idea of what it's about, really. And Anyway, John Newton, or excuse me, Wilbur Wilberforce eventually lived long enough that he witnessed the end of slavery in England. And so this film gave me hope because it showed how it took decades for that to happen. And it tells you that change, true lasting change, just takes time. And so I have hope today. I have hope that I'm going to live long enough to see even more parts of the church become accepting and inclusive of LGBT persons in ministry and marriage. And I have witnessed a lot, but I know we're not done.
Wow, that's amazing. And I love what you just said, that true lasting change takes time. We have a lot of seekers who have recently joined the ranks of Community of Christ, and many of them have come from a religion that was very conservative and quite black and white, and they're longing and yearning for faith expressed as just peace, as you said, and reflecting the sense of God that they were beginning to understand. As they journey with us, sometimes are impatient with change. And as you look at the journey of Community of Christ and change, and you line it up against other Christian denominations, major denominations, we really have had a rapid rate of change in comparison to most other denominations. And so this phrase of true lasting change takes time, I think, is a prophetic voice that you speak, and really appreciate that perspective that you share with us. Wow. So your current role as Peace and Justice Minister in the Pacific Southwest International Mission Center seems like a really big deal in light of all that you've shared with us today. I really see your role, Glenn, as a cutting edge ministry that could go so many different directions. So tell us what you're into now and what's beginning to emerge. So not only the concrete things happening or that are you're beginning to launch, but we want more of your prophetic vision as you look at things that are beginning to emerge.
Thanks. Well, I don't know if I brought that hat with me today, but I'll try my best. I focus on three dimensions of peace and justice issues. So awareness building is a big part of it. Advocacy, which involves contacting, our representatives in government and so forth, and action in the various forms that real action can take place. So one of the things that happened is I recently engaged in 100 days of exhortation and prayer, which was a spiritual practice that I just sort of improvised on January 20th when I heard the inaugural address of the US president and the declaration of an emergency at the border and the sending of troops to the border between the US and Mexico. And I thought, well, ministers pray about such things. And I am only 2 hours from that border. So I drove to a customs and border protection facility next to the fence between the US and Mexico, and I made a statement of exhortation calling out injustice, and I offered a prayer. And I shared that on social media. And each day I prayed the mission prayer for the next 100 days and asked, God, where will your spirit lead today? That's how that prayer begins. And I took that question quite literally. So I reviewed what was happening in the news each morning, and I tried to use the most reliable sources I could find. And I went to a different place every day that was impacted by the injustice that I saw each day. So I went to the Panamanian consultant to pray for peace with Panama. I went to the Long Beach Harbor to pray for those potentially impacted by disastrous trade policies. I went to the local hospital, to schools, Meals on Wheels facilities, homeless shelters, children's detention facilities, adult detention facilities, the site of the Eaton Fire, the Agua Caliente Bandipia Indians Government Center, a Red Cross office, a Planned Parenthood clinic, a local police department, a wind energy field, a national forest, and well, there were 100 different ones. I won't go into them all. And so each time I spoke to an issue of peace and justice based on our enduring principles, and I prayed for victims, for perpetrators, and bystanders. And I prayed for forgiveness for myself and others who were complicit or who were experienced privilege as it related to any of these various issues. And it was exhausting, and yet somehow it was exhilarating and energizing. And it was all done using what I believe is probably the first Community of Christ-owned electric vehicle, which I'm proud to be driving. Please forgive me for that. I know we're not supposed to be prideful, but that was something that was really quite amazing, because a part of this whole exhausting process then involved charging the vehicle every night, which meant going somewhere and sitting for, up to an hour sometimes. So that was I think, an amazing experience. I also recently was involved in holding a retreat up at Camp Buckhorn, a peace and justice retreat. I was the director. 70 Rob Heverling was the guest minister, along with his wife Laura. And Rob is the full-time pastor of the Council Bluffs Central Congregation in Iowa and a former news director for local television stations. So I met him when he was the news director in Buffalo for the ABC affiliate station there. And our theme for this was What is Truth? And we talked a lot about how we consume news and information and the reliability and the balance of all of that. And so we had some really meaningful spiritual dimensions of this retreat, as well as some really informative sessions with Rob, who brings a very unique perspective as a journalist, a former journalist. So now I'm focusing on developing a number of resources for congregational use. They're typically brief study texts and accompanying PowerPoints. And the first one I called Swords into Plowshares, and it can be covered in an afternoon or over 2 to 3 Sunday school sessions. And I'm also developing a resource on income inequality and barriers to social mobility in Mexico, which was a real stretch. But Larry McGuire, our Mission Center president, is really anxious to see us develop Spanish language resources and to be focused on the international dimension of our Mission Center. We have two congregations in Baja California, and we have a third Spanish-speaking congregation in Los Angeles. And so I'd like to develop a Community Christ resource on, and haven't started this yet. But on the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount. And I have started on a resource that's basically a book study on the God of Peace toward a theology of nonviolence, which is by John Deere. Many in Community of Christ are familiar with some of the works of John Deere. Also, as I said, I recently moved to Thousand Palms, and as a part of my efforts in seminary, we participated in an exercise called a pastoral spiral. Some people who've been in seminary will be familiar with what that is. And it's basically a way of sort of systematically thinking about our ministry and our call. And I kind of found that as I was moving into the Coachella Valley, which is the has the highest concentration of LGBT persons of anywhere in the US. The congressional district here is the most LGBT congressional district in the country. And there's also, because of the year-round warm weather, there's a fairly sizable homeless population, or those who are unhoused. And so I kind of am looking at the intersection of that. And I was thinking about youth suicide in the LGBT community, and how important it is to try to provide ministry to those who are unhoused, and to deal with some of those issues. As it turns out, I had no way of knowing this, but there is literally a shelter for unhoused youth right here at Thousand Palms nearby. And so I'm now exploring how I can be involved in supporting that effort. I'm going through an online training this month to be able to work as a volunteer there. And so there are just many, many different dimensions to being a peace and justice minister, both inside and outside the church, being involved ecumenically and in interfaith activities and so on.
Thanks so much, Glenn. I mean, I just have like fireworks going on as you're talking because I just find it all so exciting. And I noticed that you were doing 100 days of prayer and exhortation online because we're Facebook friends, and I was like, wow, this is just the coolest thing ever. And thinking, you put a lot of effort into that. A person, just about anybody, could find a way to do that in their personal life, even if they don't have an electric car to run up and down the country. But such possibility and intentionality. I'm so in awe of that. I want to ask you a question, though. As you're talking about all these opportunities and ways you're connecting in specific areas, locations in the Mission Center, and efforts, that are like-minded that are going on, like the housing youth in your local city. How are folks in your mission center responding to your ministry, and are they connecting or even beginning to have a sense of personal call to support things in their areas? What does that look like right now?
Yeah, and I wouldn't want to claim that that's a response necessarily to what I'm doing, to be honest. So there are people who are forerunners. I think of Kathy Marotta and Norio Marotta and their efforts in serving the unhoused community in the Carlsbad community in San Diego County, for example. Or I think of Paul Bethel and the amazing work he's done for environmental and climate justice, and his ongoing witness to that. There are a number of people who are already involved and active, so I'm a cheerleader for that. But there have also been times when I've absolutely been approached, and on that 100-day journey, some people showed up with me occasionally, and carried signs, and offered prayer as part of that process. And then here recently, I participated in the No Kings rallies. I don't know if that was formally a part of my job or not, but I did participate in that. And at three different locations, I was started the day in Cathedral City. I then went up to Idyllwild, California, where our Camp Buckhorn is located, and they actually had hundreds of people turn out there. It was amazing. And then finished the day in Palm Springs in the evening, next to the statue of Marilyn Monroe. And it was just like amazing. There were thousands of people there. So, and I was joined in that by, Sharon and Eric Hamm, longtime ministers in Community of Christ, and by my cousin Ray Biller, who was president of GALA for 10 years. Yeah, there have been a number of ways that people have started to engage, and I've been contacted, and I've gone into congregations to offer these resources. That we did training, sort of the field testing of the Swords into Plowshares resource at the Anaheim congregation, for example. So I anticipate doing more of that. And I'm in congregations 3 out of 4 Sundays, speaking and sharing with members. And my focus, quite naturally, it's always been on peace and justice, but it's even more intentional, I suppose you would say now. And that sometimes engenders a reaction and sometimes doesn't. Sometimes some of our congregations, people think of California as being this, progressive bastion or whatever, but it's not entirely the case. I mean, there are many diverse ways of looking at peace and justice issues in Community of Christ, just as there are in the nation and in the world. And so, sometimes some congregations, you get a really enthusiastic response, and sometimes, I won't say that it falls flat, but you have to adjust your approach. And so, when I speak to a congregation where I know that the people have more traditional viewpoints, if you will, I focus at, I guess, what I would call a deeper or more foundational level in what I'm sharing. And so I really try to go to the message of Jesus and the scriptural basis. And I always focus on the lectionary scripture, but in some ways, I probably in those congregations talk less about the call to action and more about the call to understanding, so that as that understanding it develops, hopefully then it emerges and begins to slowly change attitudes. So it's about building awareness. And I don't shy away from issues. I'm not suggesting that. I just maybe approach it in a slightly different way. You always adjust to your audience, right?
Yes, absolutely. I love that shifting into a call to understanding, which is just a baseline, isn't it, for a journey with Christ, no matter where we are. And I love that God meets us right where we are, and we build from there. And no doubt, it's often difficult in preaching ministry to really know exactly how what you're sharing. And of course, we always know that God is the one that works in and through whatever we're sharing. It's not about us. But you can go sometimes never knowing. And every now and then you get a feedback from somebody that you had no awareness, that it was connecting with someone in a powerful way. But I look at it like gardening. We're planting seeds. We're vehicles for God planting seeds when we share our story and bring people into the circle of the sacred story in scripture and journey to that call to understanding, as you say. Well, no doubt we have covered a lot of ground today, but it to me, Glenn, it just feels so interconnected. And I want to ask you this question: how does the 2025 World Conference fit into the trajectory of our journey as a people of faith? And how would you characterize our current place? Some might call it potential for the future, or possibilities on the fore, or prophetic hope in action. So, how we're postured at this point in time, and what does that say to you as a peace and justice minister in today's world?
Well, that's an inspiring question. And you're right, it is a journey. It's like an ongoing transformation. Theologically, I think we would state that the kingdom or the reign of God is both a present and an emerging reality. So it's a hoped for future. Our theme at conference was hope is here, but we could also say hope is coming. That's what I pray is the reality. And I think what we're going to witness is that there are going to be different ways of doing and being church. And so as more and more people get excited about the doing of church in new ways that involve action for peace and justice, I think we'll see more people getting involved in those activities, and that will see more networking and collaboration where, the name of the church doesn't have to be necessarily in the forefront of what we're doing. It's more about empowering and energizing people who are networked in the community of Christ to be involved in, as we said in the Doctrine and Covenants, the forefront. Forefront ministries, if you will. So that I think is a way in which we're witnessing that ongoing transformation is that it's not so much about an 11 a.m. Sunday morning experience, as important as that it can be for so many of us, but it is also about, where we stand and sit the rest of the week, and what we're doing, and how we shape and form our lives, and how our young people, there's so many amazing young adults in Community of Christ that are pursuing careers where they're literally out there changing the world. If we can inspire that and contribute to that, I think that is our hope. That's what tells us that hope is here, hope is coming.
Thank you so much, Glenn. Thank you. Oh gosh, just thank you so much for being our guest today. This has been a powerful interview. I have so many notes here. It's like I keep reminding myself there will be a transcript, Robin. You can review everything that Glenn has shared today. So, thank you so much, Glenn.
Absolutely, it's my pleasure.
If you would like to hear more from Glenn, check out his interview with Carla Long, episode 327, Creating Connection. You can also find a link to that episode in today's show notes, along with other helpful links to see and hear more about World Conference 2025. Hope is here. As always, a very special thanks to all of you, our listeners, for spending a portion of your day with us. This is your host, Robin Linkhart, and you are listening to Project Zion Podcast. Go out and make the world a better place. Take good care. Bye-bye.